Okay, so please apologize that I'm a little late today. I was in the dean's office and it took a little longer. So we will skip today the mind map with a big picture and just continue right away with a refresher course on the mathematical characterization of projection mappings. So that is basically the image that you should keep in mind while we talk about projections and projection models. And our plan for the lectures until Christmas is how can we reconstruct a 3D volume, a 3D cube, out of 2D X-ray projections. So the task will be, how can I compute the density values, the attenuation values in space using line integrals over the X-ray or given by the X-ray projection. And for doing so, it is very important to understand in detail the propagation path of the X-ray particles from the source to the detector element. Now we have to characterize these projection lines from the X-ray focus, from the optical center through the object to the grid point on the detector that we use for measuring the X-ray image. And it's clear if we look at the geometry of projection, if I project a 3D point that sits here on the detector, I get the same projection like a point that sits here. So all the points sitting on this projection line here, they end up with the same point in the image plane. Yeah? Or if I think this is the image plane, this is the projection ray, if I project this point here on the projection ray, this point to the image plane, I will end up at the same point like the geometric projection of this point, let me do it this way. If I project this point to the 2D plane, I get the same result as I project this point to the 2D image plane. And that means that we have here a relationship of 2D points and 3D lines. Yeah? A 2D point using a selected projection geometry can be associated with a projection line. All the points that sit on the projection line, they are in one equivalence class that is defined by the projected points. All the points, the 3D points that end up to be the same 2D point in the projection, they sit on a straight line. And on Thursday last week, we have introduced the concept of homogeneous coordinates. And the idea was, if I have a 2D point, let's say U and V, we associate with this a 3D point W times U, W times V, W. And that means we consider the point UV1 and we scale it by an arbitrary scaling factor, and this is the homogeneous coordinate of the 2D point. And if we want to come back to the 2D point, what we have to do is we just divide by the third component and get the first and second component of the point in 2D. That's the idea. So if you hear something about homogeneous coordinates, just remember, add an additional component. And if you want to switch back to the original vector, you just have to divide by the third component if you have a 2D, 3D homogeneous representation. Okay? It's very, sir. It can be any value, any scaling factor. So if I asked you, write the point 1, 2, and the point 2, 3 in homogeneous coordinates, you can write, okay, this is 25, 50, 25. And this here is 10, 15, and 5. These are homogeneous coordinates of the point with different scaling factors. No? If I tell you this is a homogeneous vector associated with a 2D point, you start right away to divide by 5, the first, the second component, and you end up with this period. Okay? Now you say, oh, these weird German guys, you know, what are they thinking about? This is an international concept, first. Second, why does it make sense? I introduced to you already perspective projection. And in perspective projection, if you have a point and you want to project this point perspectively into the image plane, or this point perspectively into the image plane, what do you have to do? You have here your F, you have here your X prime coordinate, you have here, let's say, your Y, and here you have your X coordinate, and then you use just similar triangles. So you have X divided by Y is X prime divided by F. And anything wrong? I mix up the notation. I think I called it last week differently, but doesn't matter. So we have X divided by Y, X prime divided by F. This is equivalent. So we have here X prime is F X Y. Or F divided by Y times X. Then we can do, we can do this. And so what we see is we multiply the original value by F and divide it by Y, or we divide X by Y divided by F. So you can rewrite this in terms of a homogeneous vector, 2D vector, writing this is X and Y divided by F. And if you switch back to the 1D vector, then you have X divided by the second component, and you get the original vector. Yeah? So we can write this nonlinear mapping in terms of homogeneous coordinates also linearly. That's nice. Yeah? So that's one argument that makes it very nice. And the other argument, let's think about lines. How do you represent a line in 2D? Well, lines in 2D, you have the normal vector times X is D, yeah? And this can be rewritten as normal vector times X minus D is 0. And if you are in 2D, you can also write AX plus BY, this is just the inner product, minus D is 0. And what happens to a point that sits on the line? Well, a point that sits on the line, so xy is element of this line if ax plus by minus d is 0, right? If the line equation is fulfilled. We can also rewrite this and say this is ab minus d times x, y, 1, is 0. That means that the inner product of the coefficients of the line equation with a homogeneous vector associated with x, y has to be 0. And this means that the vector x, y, 1 is orthogonal to a, b minus d. If you think in 3D, that means that these two vectors are orthogonal, because if the inner product of two vectors is 0, what happens? They are orthogonal, right? Okay. Now you say, is that a good idea here to work with homogeneous coordinates? Well, it looks okay, but it's not so convincing. But I'll show you one example where this now really makes sense. Sorry. So solve the following problem. Assume we have two lines. Given or affine functions. So we have a x plus by minus d or plus c is 0. That's the first line. And the second one is dx plus f is 0. So now compute the intersection of the two lines. Where do these two points intersect? Well, where do these two lines intersect? In which point? So this can be rewritten a, b, c times x, y1 is 0. And this can be rewritten as d, e, f, x, y1 is 0. And now we argue geometrically. So we look for a point that is orthogonal to ABC. And we look for a point that is orthogonal to DEF. So the solution is the intersection of lines is given by simply A, B, C, D, E, F by the cross product of these two vectors. Yeah? This is the point of intersection. Because what is the cross product doing? The cross product computes what? That computes the vector that is orthogonal to the other two vectors. Yeah? And once again, this one, this equation says xy1 has to be orthogonal to ABC. This here, this equation tells us xy1 has to be orthogonal to DEF. So we look for a vector that is both orthogonal to ABC and DEF. And in 3D, that's just the cross product. Hey, is that cool? But we have an ambiguity in it. That's up to scaling, right? Up to scaling. But we are working here with homogeneous coordinates. So if we switch back to 2D coordinates, we just divide by the third component, and we are done. Isn't that cool? You like it? That's cool. Yeah. So if we have to compute, or if we have to solve two equations with two unknowns, two heterogeneous equations with two unknowns, we just have to compute an inner product and then compute the ratio of the first and second component with the third component each. That's cool. Yeah, that's a side effect of homogeneous coordinates. Are you convinced now that this is a cool concept? You have been before, I know. Okay, good. So, very powerful. So again, the homogeneous coordinates, we just, if we transform a 2D Euclidean vector into a 3D homogeneous vector, this is just what we have to do. Add another component and multiply with a scalar. Yeah? And it's clear that this representation has a singularity for W, or for the scaling factor, to be zero. And in most cases, we are considering this is not the case. Okay? We add an epsilon, so it's non-zero. So a point in homogeneous coordinates, a 2D point, is just denoted by this triple here. And we can easily switch back and forth between the Euclidean and the homogeneous representation here. So now we define an equivalence relation. We call two homogeneous points P and Q equivalent if they are identical up to scaling. And I mean, look at this here. This is something where we have a clear geometric association. Yeah? And this is a 2D line, a 2D line where this is the norm vector and this is the intercept of the line, or the distance of the line to the origin. And of course, a point sits on the line if this equation is fulfilled, and a point also sits on the line if I scale this point with an arbitrary, here, one times lambda, yeah, with an arbitrary scaling factor, lambda or W. Yeah? So here you see the relationship between the 2D points and the scaling. Yeah? This is the type of scaling that we allow for. An example, homogeneous point, 2, 3, 1. How do we transform this into a 2D point? Divide by the third component. Yeah? And that's usually the range of complexity I'm feeling comfortable with. The last component is 1. Here, 4, 6, 2. Of course, they are not the same 3D vectors, but the same homogeneous points, because if you divide by the third component, they all end up with 2, 3. Important, we have always to reconsider now the question, are we considering the points in a homogeneous space or in a Euclidean space? In a homogeneous space, they can be component-wise differently to each other, but in terms of this scaling here, they are identical in the Euclidean space. Huh? That's something where you always have to ask the question, is it a homogeneous vector or not? And now you can imagine what's going to happen. Yeah? I will take my right hand and start hand waving. Here we mark and we label the homogeneous points always with a tilde. And we say two points are equivalent up to scaling. So they are identical up to scaling. Yeah? And if you see the tilde, you know these are homogeneous vectors. And if you see the equality sign with the tilde, you see it's identical up to scaling. But now you know what's going to happen. At some point, I will just skip the tilde. And I don't use equal tilde, but just equal. And then at some point, you see things like 1, 2, 3 is, or 2, 3, 1 is equal to 6, 9, 3. Yeah? As vectors, and then you have to remember these are homogeneous vectors. Yeah. So the question at the end of the day will be always, do you mean homogeneous vectors or Euclidean vectors? Yeah, because it's not that visible and obvious in the notation anymore if we are dealing with this on a daily basis. Yeah, hand waving. Just come back to what I said in the context of Fourier transform, you know, constant factors is something that we ignore and fix it at the end of the day. Okay? But don't tell the mathematicians. Here is the example with a straight line. Ax plus by. See, it's a linear manifold. In this case, a 2D line in space. It's clear for us that I can multiply the whole equation with an arbitrary factor and nothing happens. Yeah? Nothing happens because I have the zero on the right side. And in terms of homogeneous coordinates, we can characterize a 2D line just by the coefficients here of this degree bivariate one, of this bivariate degree one polynomial here. Yeah, it's degree one in x and y, bivariate because we have two variables. So it's linear, it's a straight line. And the coefficients of x, y, and 1, they characterize the line perfectly. Once again, if we have now a line given by L, and no, the three prefactors of x, y, and 1, and then a point comes in, the point sits on the line if the equation is fulfilled. In terms of geometry, that means P is orthogonal to L in 3D. Yeah, now we have the 2D line, but now we think in 3D and orthogonal vectors in 3D. So it's from an abstraction level, it's a little bit complicated, but if you use brute force algebra and your intuition about these algebraic concepts, then you can work through these things. Now we have two lines. That's what I have shown to you already on the blackboard here. If a point in homogeneous coordinates sits both on L1 and L2, that means P has to be orthogonal to L1 and P has to be orthogonal to L2. And then we just compute the cross product in 3D to get the solution. Yeah? So if you have to solve in the future two equations, heterogeneous linear equations with two unknowns, you can just compute an inner product and you have the solution up to scaling. It's cool, very cool. I like this, this is one of the most convincing examples why homogeneous coordinates open up nice computations or ways to compute things. There's also a set of ideal points that lie on the line of infinity, and the line of infinity is given by the vector 0, 0, 1. And if you compute 0, 0, 1 times x1, x2, and then you take the 0, so the third component in our homogeneous vector is 0, then you see that we end up with 0. And that basically also tells us that the homogeneous vector, where we have the singularity in the third part, is always orthogonal to this vector up to scaling, to the 0, 0, 1 vector. Now the question is, can we show that parallel lines intersect in the space of homogeneous vector in 3D? And actually we can show that the line at infinity has a very special role in this. Good. And now, having in mind the homogeneous coordinates, we can now look into projections and how to characterize projections. And the nice thing is, if we use homogeneous coordinates, also the perspective projections can be written in terms of linear algebra, in terms of a linear mapping. And that makes life so much easier. Folks, it makes life so much easier for us that you all should carefully listen now. And we will use this, what you learned today, as one of the basic concepts for CT reconstruction. And the nice thing now is also for you to know this concept here was developed, of course, by mathematicians, but then it was not applied because it was, as usual, characterized in a very difficult manner that people didn't know what's actually going on. And in computer vision, in the computer vision community, with the beginning of the 90s, homogeneous coordinates found their way into computer vision. And we developed very nice algorithms to calibrate cameras, to compute the projection ray geometry for a given camera. And we were able to do many fancy things using camera images. And in 1995, colleagues of mine who were very familiar with the concept of computer vision, they came into the field of medical imaging, and then they have transferred this technology into medical imaging, and that was basically the birth hour of a totally new generation of computed tomography scanners that make heavily use of homogeneous coordinates and the projection matrices that we are going to discuss in the following. So from a historical point of view, this is also a nice example, because medical imaging up to the 90s, 2000s was basically driven by physicists. People that grew out of physics, and they have no computer vision background, and so they were not aware of these nice mathematical concepts that allow us to characterize X-ray systems in a very dense and nice manner. So let's look at orthographic projection first. If you hear orthographic projection, what do you think about? What is the characteristics of orthographic projection? No scaling. Yeah, that's your girlfriend that disappears and is not shrinking at all. Yeah, it's just taking out of each XYZ point the XY coordinate, and it's independent of Z. Yeah, so orthographic projection, in German we usually say parallel projection. Parallel projection. And the idea now is, so you have a point x, y, z. This is projected to the point x, y. And if you write this in terms of homogeneous coordinates, that means x, y, z1 is mapped to x, y, and 1. And this can be rewritten in terms of a projection matrix. That means x, y, c1 is multiplied with 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1. And you end up with x, y, c, and 1, x, y, 1. Okay. Yeah. So this here makes sure that the z is weighted by 0 and just the 1 comes in. Okay? Is it wrong? No. What's so funny? It's okay. It's not about me? No. Perspective projection. Well, XY C1 maps to well, if you have a focal length of f, this maps to f times x divided by z, f times y divided by z and 1. Or if we look into the Euclidean space, we can rewrite it this way. Okay? Okay? So from 3D to 2D, that's the perspective projection. In homogeneous coordinates, and we now assume F to be 1, okay? Without any limitation, we can assume F is 1. So if we assume F is 1, then we map x, y, z, 1 to x, y, z. Because then if I divide by the third component, I exactly get the formula above with F is 1. Okay? So we can now rewrite this in terms of the projection matrix. So this is x, y, z, and 1. And how does the projection matrix look like? 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0. And this ends up to be x, y, and z. Okay? Now look at this. Isn't that wonderful? Orthographic projection, perspective projection. And the only place where these two mappings differ from each other is just here, the component 3 and 4 in the third line. So the only difference here is that here we have 0, 1, and here we have 1, 0. And it's incredible that a single permutation, a single transposition here causes so much trouble later on. But in homogeneous coordinates, both can be written in terms of a linear mapping. Okay? So here is the perspective projection with a prefactor, or that's not perspective projection, that's a scaled orthographic projection where we have here an additional scaling factor, which ends up to be here something 1 over k. Now again, scaled orthographic projection means we forget about the z component and scale the xy component by a factor k. Of course, this can also be expressed in terms of a projection matrix, and here we have the perspective projection where here is our projection matrix. If F is 1, we have 1, 1, 1, and the last column is 0, like we have it characterized here already. Okay? Good. Okay. And now we will talk about extrinsic and intrinsic cameras. Extrinsic and intrinsic cameras. So, do you have an iPhone here or a smartphone? Can I take it? Can I keep it? No. So here is a camera, okay? It's a camera. And this camera, of course, has a focal length. And this camera lens, it's a Samsung, so it might have also high distortions. I think the camera is way better than the other ones. Yeah. So I'm just making fun here. So we can calibrate this camera. Calibrate means, for instance, we can compute the focal distance or the focal length of this camera, F. We compute F. Okay? And now the question is, if I move around this, do you think the F changes? Probably not. Yeah. If the lens is fixed and nothing is shaky in here, the F should be constant. And we call these parameters that characterize the camera but do not change if I move the camera, intrinsic camera parameters, okay? Intrinsic, because it's intrinsic. It doesn't change. You move around things and it doesn't change. Okay? If you have your intrinsic camera parameters, that's what we are going to discuss next subchapter. You might think about what changes if I move around the camera. Of course, I rotate the camera and I translate the camera. Huh? I rotate the camera and I translate. Rotation has 3 degrees of freedom. I can rotate around the x-axis, y-axis, and z-axis. Yeah? So I have 3 degrees of freedom in terms of rotation. And then I can translate the camera. And translation means a 3D vector, t1, t2, t3, characterizes where I move the camera to. And these 6 degrees of freedom we call extrinsic camera parameters. Yeah? Extrinsic means rotation and translation. Intrinsic means the mapping of the 3D world to the 2D CCD chip that is given by the optics that is in the camera and that should not change. Yeah? Okay, hope it survived. And now the question is, how can we compute the extrinsic camera parameter? That means, how can we compute the rotation and translation of our camera? And in the second subchapter, we will look into the mathematical characterization of the intrinsic parameters that are fixed for the camera setup. Yeah? And of course, these things also hold for X-ray systems. If you have an X-ray tube, a detector, that basically defines the mapping. And if you move around the X-ray tube and the detector, you change the extrinsic coordinates. Yeah? And if you have a good system, the distance of the X-ray focus to the detector should not change, and the whole system should keep the intrinsic parameters. Okay? Now we understood what are the extrinsic and intrinsic parameters. Extrinsic parameters, we know already, there are 6. 3 rotations, 3 translations. And now, how can we incorporate this into our mapping? And that's what we do now. How can we characterize 3D rotations in terms of math? It's a linear mapping. There is a rotation matrix. In 2D, we already computed the rotation matrix. You remember where we looked at the images of the base vectors. And we can do the same game in 3D, and we will end up with a 3x3 rotation matrix. So assume it's all on the slides, extrinsic camera parameters. So we have a rotation. And this is a rotation matrix. It's an R 3x3 matrix. And this matrix is even orthonormal, right? So orthonormal means that its inverse is its transpose. Its inverse is its transpose. So it's just rotating things. There is no stretching, no nothing. It's just rotation. And if I have a point, x, y, and z, that is required to be rotated. How can I express this? I just multiply the rotation matrix from the left. And if the rotated point has to be translated, then I just add here a 3D translation vector. This is an affine mapping. So the extrinsic parameters given by the rotation matrix and the translation vector defines an affine mapping. Yeah. And this can be written also this way. we multiply the matrix R that is extended by an additional column. It's extended by an additional column T with the homogeneous vector over there. That is exactly the first column times X, the second column times Y, the third column times Z plus T times 1. Where R is R1, R2, R3. These are the column vectors. We're just rewriting things here. And that's something also that you should start to be very familiar with, to switch back and forth between column representation, row representation of matrices, and linear combinations of these. And now you might say, okay, here I end up with a 3D vector, but I want to end up with a homogeneous vector. So we have to do a further extension, and then we are at a nice representation of all this. We have to extend the 3x4 matrix to a 4x4 matrix, and I'll show to you how that works. So yeah, here, this one I should write here, but I write this, okay? And waving. That's the way I write it now. Yeah, I add just the fourth component, a fourth row to the matrix where I have here zeros and here one. So if I multiply the last row with this vector, I end up with the one here and I get a homogeneous vector over there. Yeah. So rotation and translation of a point can be characterized by a matrix that carries the extrinsic camera parameters encoded in R and T, and it's a 4x4 matrix. Okay? So how does it look like if I rotate a point, rotate and project? Well, rotate and project means I first rotate a point, so I have X, Y, C1. I rotate and translate so I have R T 1 0 0 0 that gives the rotated and translated point, and now I do a perspective projection and I get 1 0 0 0 1 0 0, and if I do perspective projection I get this one and I end up here with U, V, lambda to be the 2D projected point that I get if I rotate a point, translate it, and project it perspectively. Yeah? And here we use a nice property. If we want to compose functions in the language of linear algebra with matrices, compositing just means multiply the matrices. That's the nice property we use here. Okay? Again, that's nice. Let's look what we put into the slides here. An X-ray source can be translated in 3D, an X-ray source can be rotated in 3D, and this has to be characterized. And there is an artificial word, pose, that means position and orientation. Position means where is the focus, the focal point in space, and orientation means in which direction does the camera look. Yeah. So position means the translation vector. And then, we can change the viewing direction this way and this way. So we have 2 degrees of freedom. And then I can rotate around the axis. That's the third one. Yeah, position and orientation. And we need that later. If you think about these C-arm devices, yeah, they can rotate. Here's the X-ray tube, the detector, X-ray tube detector, and we rotate things around the object. We translate the C-arm, and we want to characterize the projection of 3D points on our detector. And for that, we need this matrix of extrinsic parameters. This is the characterization I already put on the blackboard, even consistent with my notation by accident. And here is everything written in terms of homogeneous coordinates. We have the rotation, the translation, and here the fourth component that brings us up here, the one or the scaling factor at the end. How does the rotation matrix look like? Once again, you just use the unit impulses or the unit vectors and look what happens to unit vectors by the rotation, and then you get the columns of the matrix. You remember that? Yeah, if you want to have the columns of the rotation matrix, you just put here a 1 and then 0, 0. If you just allow rotations and then you get the first column, then you put in the vector 0, 1, 0, and you get the second, and so on. No? Just look what happens by rotation to the unit vectors. Okay? Good. It's a nice exercise, homework exercise for you to compute a 3x3 rotation matrix for a given rotation. And the easiest is to do the following. Consider rotations around the x-axis. Consider rotations around the y-axis. And consider rotations around the z-axis. And then say one rotation is a simultaneous rotation around x, y, and z-axis, and multiply these three matrices together, because that's function compositing. And then you have the rotation matrix. And that's exactly the point where you decide to go with computer algebra systems, because you don't want to do these multiplications by hand. I motivated already the intrinsic parameters. Yeah? That's the focal distance of an optical system, for instance, 1. Actually, we have to deal with 5 intrinsic parameters. Overall, the camera has 11 degrees of freedom. And now, let's think why that makes sense. If you look at this, yeah, if you look at this, we will end up with a 3x4 matrix. Yeah? 3 rows, 3 columns. A 3x4 matrix has how many components? 12. Everything is unique up to scaling. So we can multiply the matrix by an arbitrary scaling factor, and things do not change. So at the end of the day, this matrix has basically 11 degrees of freedom. And the projection at the end of the day is characterized by a 3x4 matrix with 11 degrees of freedom. 6 we have already seen by rotation and translation. Another 5 are missing, and these are the intrinsic parameters. Okay? So it's plausible, even just with the math that we have considered so far. The projection matrix at the end of the day will have 3x4 components. Up to scaling, we have the identities, so we can divide by the last component to normalize it. So we have 11 degrees of freedom. And now we look for the physics underlying these 11 degrees of freedom. And now think about the detector. The detector has an x1 and xy dimension, or x and y dimension. And the detector is built in a very difficult manufacturing process. And what we can do first is we cannot assume that the detector columns and rows are defined by a coordinate system that has an orthogonal base system of base vectors. So there can be a non-rectangular base coordinate system. If we read out our pixels, it's not guaranteed that we have a precise rectangular coordinate system. So we have already degrees of freedoms. Let's count them. DOF, degrees of freedoms for the intrinsics. We have 1 degree of freedom already. Okay. Another degree of freedom that we have is we have our columns and we have our rows. And modern systems usually have the nice situation, if I walk for 1 pixel to the right or 1 pixel up, it corresponds to the same distance in space. So if I have 1 pixel in x direction, that's 1 millimeter, and 1 pixel in y direction, that's 1 millimeter. But many systems, they don't have quadratic pixels. That means 1 pixel in x direction is 1 millimeter, 1 pixel in y direction is 0.5 millimeter, for instance. So we have non-rectangular pixels. They are wider than high or vice versa. Yeah. So we have non-rectangular pixels, and we have here scaling factors kx and ky. Another 2 unknowns. And then our ideal coordinate system, x and y, our ideal coordinate system that we use later on for discussion has an offset u and v. So the coordinate system that we will look at later on that is idealized with a normalized entries has an offset, and the offset is given by u and v. Yeah? So we have another 2 degrees of freedom. So we have already 5. That's the angle of our coordinate system on the CCD chip. That's the scaling factor in x and y direction. Yeah? The scaling factor in x and y direction. And that's the offset of the ideal coordinate system to our CCD chip coordinate system. And now you say, hey, you motivated the intrinsic parameters with the focal distance. That was the only one I could intuitively grab. Then you told us there are 5 intrinsic degrees of freedom. Now you explained to us the 5 intrinsic degrees of freedom, but you didn't mention the only one that was plausible to me in advance to the discussion. So where is the flaw? The flaw is, of course, we have a focal distance or a detector source detector distance of the X-ray tube, X-ray focus to the detector, but this parameter is in the final formulas always coupled to kx and ky, so you cannot separate these two. Yeah? So the focal distance is encoded in the scaling factor for the x and y coordinate. That's the reason why the focal distance does not show up explicitly. Okay, so 5 degrees of freedom. Very, very common question in the oral exam. Tell me what is the difference between intrinsic, extrinsic parameters. Tell me what are the 5 intrinsic parameters, and then you have to list them. Okay? Good. So once again, here I listed the properties. Intrinsic parameters do not change if the camera moves. Yeah? If you have an autofocus camera, of course, the focus changes. Yeah? If you move and you change the distance to objects, things adapt. Here, We assume that the intrinsic parameters are constant while moving the camera. The origin of the detector coordinate system does not coincide with the intersection of the optical axis and the ideal image plane in general. The optical axis is the projection line that is intersecting the image plane with the detector, or intersecting the image plane orthogonally. All the other rays are intersecting the plane in another angle. And the central projection ray that intersects the flat panel detector orthogonally, that defines the origin of our coordinate system. Yeah, so that defines the origin of our ideal coordinate system, and that's where the offset comes from. Okay? The coordinate axis of the detector are by manufacturing not necessarily orthogonal, so you have a so-called skew angle here, theta. And in fact, we calibrate this angle. If we set up an X-ray system today and we compute the intrinsic camera parameters, we compute also this theta. The pixels are non-quadratic, so we have scaling factors in X and Y direction. And there might be a radial distortion due to the camera optics, but that's something that we do not consider. We assume that the images are undistorted already, yeah? Like we have described it in one of the original chapters. So, and that's the situation we are in. That's the optical center. That means that's the point where the projection ray, the central projection ray orthogonally intersects the image plane. And this is the coordinate system of our detector. And what we now have to do is we have to transform all points that we have in detector coordinates into coordinates of this ideal coordinate system. And this is a linear transform. And how do we estimate the linear transform? It's an engineering task. You are equipped with all the math that is required to do this job. Think about it. Any volunteers? Stefan, was los? How would you compute this transformation? Point here to this coordinate system. Let's assume that the offset is zero, that the two coordinate systems coincide. Yeah? So we have this one here. This is called U and V. And we have no colors. This one here, that is X and Y. So, and we have to transform one point from this skewed coordinate system into this one. Or we compute the transformation out of this coordinate system in this one, and then we take the matrix and invert it. Okay, that's the easier task. So what happens to a point that sits in the ideal coordinate system and has to be mapped into the skewed one? Well, if we want to estimate this linear mapping, we have just to look what happens to the unit vectors. So what we have to do is we have to consider unit vectors. So 1, 0 and 0, 1. And what happens to 1, 0 if I map it into the UV coordinate system. Well, let me do the Y coordinate. The Y coordinate does not change, okay? And Leah, you do the X coordinate. You do the X coordinate. I have it somewhere here, yes. But we just have the scaling, yeah? These points are scaled by a factor kx. So if we transform it, we just divide by the kx. So 1 over kx. And the other one, 0, 1. So that's this one here. I do the x coordinate in this case. The x coordinate is? Yeah. The x coordinate. So here is the theta. Yeah. And then we have here the x and y coordinate. So what happens, what is the x coordinate here? We map this point to this point here. The cosine of? Yeah. Made it by 1 over kx. And 1 over ky. Yeah? So we do here the scaling of the weighted with the cosine, and this one here is weighted by the sine of theta, and then we get the matrix that maps the ideal to the skewed ones, and the skewed ones to the ideal ones is then given by the inverse of it. Yeah? So we compute the inverse of this vector. Hold on, there is a ky scaled by ky scaled by ky. Ky, that's the scaling here. X, yes, ky, by the ky. And we compute the inverse and we get the arcus tangens here. That's weird. That's the arcus tangens. Yeah? In some books you find just the derivation using this way, but I consider the forward mapping and then the inverse of it to be simpler, also in terms of the arcus tangens argument. Yeah? So here we use simply standard trigonometry, and we can compute the transformation. So we have the mapping of a 2D point by T, x, y, and then we have to transform it by UV. And this can, of course, be again expressed in terms of homogeneous coordinates. So we have here our transformation matrix and our displacement vector here. The transformation UV or CX, CY, if that's the center of the ray. And here again, the trick with the last line having the zeros, zeros, and one. And this is the matrix that includes the intrinsic parameters, the intrinsic camera parameters. And this one is usually called K. K. And now we can build things together and characterize the complete projections. So what do? We rotate translate. We do the projection, orthographic or perspective or whatever. And then we have the ideal point. And the ideal point has to be transformed into the detector coordinates. And that's done by the intrinsic matrix K. And if we multiply these matrices together, so we multiply D, P, and K together, we end up with a matrix that is a 3x4 matrix, and this one is the so-called projection matrix. That's the projection matrix P that is a 3x4 projection matrix. The projection matrix. P K P proy times D. And this is a 3x4 matrix with 4 columns. And if I have a homogeneous vector, and it should be rotated, translated, projected, and transformed into the flat panel detector coordinates, we just apply the projection matrix. If we want to calibrate an X-ray system, we need for each position and orientation in space just the projection matrix, and then we know how 3D points are mapped to the detector coordinates. That's all we need. So if we have to calibrate a system, we just compute here the projection matrix. And now I'll explain to you how to calibrate a system. Yeah? What do we do is the following. We manufacture a ring with bullets in here. This is done by mechanical engineers. It's precisely manufactured. We call this calibration pattern. And the mechanical engineers tell us up to a tenth of a millimeter where these bullets are in space with respect to a coordinate system that sits in the center of this calibration pattern. Okay, and then we X-ray this, and we get these bullets in our X-ray image in terms of detector coordinates. This pattern here is just used to do the assignment of the observed points in the X-ray projection to the points on our calibration ring to find uniquely the correspondences of the points. And these are the points that are observed. And now we have the following situation given. Calibration pattern. And the calibration pattern is given by x1, x2, y1, z1, x1, y1. Was mache ich denn? 2, 2, up to, let's say, xn, yn, cn. Okay? These are the points in 3D that are given by our mechanical engineering friends. Okay? Okay. Good. And then we observe these 2D points. Observed points in X-ray projection. So we call them U1, V1, U2, V2. Now let's assume that we all see them in the projection. What is not true, but it's easier to make you aware of the concept that is used here. Okay? So far, so good. You agree on that? Of course. And now we know, okay, you have it? You have it? That's not well done here. Now we know how the 3D points are mapped to the 2D points by the projection matrix. Yeah? So we know that for all I, xi, ui, vi, let's call it wi, is, let me write it this way, wi, is a projection matrix times xi, yi, zi1, okay? And the projection matrix is a 3x4 matrix, and we can also write this in terms of its row vectors. Where RK are the four-dimensional row vectors. I do that for a certain reason that you will see in a few seconds. Okay? So we orthogonally project this vector on the first row, the second row, and the third row of the projection matrix and get the homogeneous vector of the 2D points. Okay? So this here is the identity up to scaling, okay? So if I want to compute ui, ui is the first component divided by the last component. So it's r1 transposed the vector xi divided by r3 transposed xi. I just divide the first component by the last component, okay? To get the first coordinate. And vi is r2 transposed xi, r3 transposed xi. I translate the homogeneous vectors into Euclidean vectors. So the points that I have here with the coordinate x and y in my, or u and v in my detector coordinate is given by these two ratios. Okay? Okay? You agree on that? Good. Good. Now I don't know the components of the first row, the second row, and the third row. So these are my unknowns. But I expect things to be as similar as possible. So what I can do is, and that's unfair what I do now, I just say here, the difference has to be zero. And now I know exactly know what's going to happen. Instead of considering the difference, we take the square and we require this to be as small as possible. So compute R1 and R3, R2 and R2, such that these differences for all the points are minimum. And now Leia says, here the components of R, or the projection matrix, are linear. And here they are linear, but the ratio kills it. The ratio kills it, so it's nonlinear. We run into a nonlinear optimization problem, and she's very unhappy with that. And now we do the following. I can multiply this equation with a denominator. So what I get here is ui multiplied with R3 transpose xi minus R1 transpose xi is 0, and vi R3 transpose xi minus R2 transpose xi is required to be 0. And this here, by just multiplying with a denominator, is linear in the components of the projection matrix. And that makes us extremely happy, because now we can set up a least square estimator, and I'll show you how that works. So the projection matrix is argmin of all the elements of P for all the point correspondences. I is 1 to n. We have n point correspondences. We minimize ui times R3 transpose xi minus R1 transpose xi square plus vi R3. So this is a V, and this is an R. Transpose X I minus R2 transpose X I square. Okay. We minimize this with respect to the components of P. And this is a quadratic function. If you compute the derivative, it's linear, and you have to compute the solution of a homogeneous system of equation. But there is one constraint that we have to consider, because P is unique up to scaling, and subject to, and what we ask for is that the Frobenius norm of the projection matrix is 1. That means the sum of squares of the components of P has to be 1. And this has to be solved, and then your system is calibrated. So from a mathematical algorithmic point of view, it's not very hard. It's just always the same, just be cool and do all the math, but it's not complicated at all. It turns out to be a linear problem. Go for a calibration pattern, capture image of a calibration pattern, compute the 2D, 3D correspondences, and go into this linear estimator here. Sir?
Doesn't that mean that we have to 100% process on the detection of those patterns?
Yes. Misaligned on a wrong point, then you screw things up. Yes. And that's also why we will talk about this on Thursday again, how to compute that. So this is the spiral phantom that is used to nowadays with the C-arm systems with the known points. And then you set up here the system of equations with the components, the vectors, and the observations, And then you get this ratio here. Everything is written in terms of component writing, yeah, not just an inner product like I did it on the blackboard. Then you have to solve this, but this is uncomfortable because it's a nonlinear optimization problem. You multiply with a denominator and you end up here with a system of linear equations, and that's the measurement matrix you have to use for the SVD computation. Yeah? So the number of degrees of freedom is 11, yes, because 1 degree of freedom is eliminated by this constraint here. And on Thursday, we will briefly summarize this and go a little slower through the slides to reconsider what I did at the blackboard. And then we will start with the chapter on image reconstruction on Thursday. Thank you very much and see you on Thursday.